Hello and welcome. We're now going to venture into our third area of intellectual property law, and that is trademarks. Trademarks are exciting little entities, and we're going to discuss them with respect to what they are and what they mean. They are, unlike a patent and a copyright, they're things that are not necessarily useful. They are a identification of what you want to market or sell. Remember our copyrights, which are rights in writings or art or expression. Patents, which are products that you produce by means of a process or machine or combination of materials. And tonight we're going to talk about trademarks, which are logos and identifications. Now, remember, not all property is tangible. We need to think of property in terms of rights, not in terms of things, because otherwise you wouldn't have intellectual property, and intellectual property is very important. It's rights and ideas. And although common law, as we said before, was reluctant to invest property rights in ideas, modern society has said we want to have laws that protect property rights to include unique intellectual designs or processes or works. And that law is federal law because our founders were smart enough to put it in our Constitution and direct it to one of the powers of the federal government. So whereas most property laws, state laws, we've said many times, all intellectual property is based on these federal statutes. So you have very little common law for intellectual property law. It is based in federal statutory law. What is intellectual property? It's any product of human intellect that is intangible. That means you can't hold it in your hand, but it has value in the marketplace because those ideas are valuable. It's called intellectual property because it's the product of your imagination, of your creativity, of your inventiveness. And you work hard on it and you deserve to be rewarded. That's why it's so important. We want to encourage people to be creative and we invent things. And we want to provide an incentive and reward for that hard work. So we will protect that. As a society to be able to say, we want more of that. We want you to be able to keep the efforts of your labor. And that's intellectual labor, not just physical labor. That's why intellectual property as a collection of rights is so important. Remember, there's three types. We talked earlier about copyrights. Those are rights in written or performed works, arts, expressions. We talked about patents. Those are ideas for products or processes to be able to create those products, or a combination of materials which develops that product. Lastly, tonight we're going to talk about trademarks, which are logos or identifications or distinctions. And whereas a patent has to be useful, trademarks generally aren't. Let's talk about it. What is a definition of trademark? A word or a symbol or a name or a device used by a person to identify and distinguish their goods from those sold by others. Remember when we talked about copyrights, you had that little C with a circle around it. Well, trademarks have something very similar. They have an R with a circle around it. And you say, why doesn't it a T? Well, it's because trademarks are called a registered trademark. So that R with a circle around it stands for registered trademark. Interestingly enough, there was an old television show many years ago that some of you may have seen, who, if you are a comic book fan, called Batman and Robin. And Robin was Batman's sidekick. Every great superhero has a sidekick, and Robin was Batman's. And Robin had on his disguise, if you will, he wore a cape with a disguise mask on it. But on his chest, he had an R with a circle around it. Stood for Robin. But in this case, it stands for registered trademark. And guess what was a registered trademark? The Robin character. Interestingly enough. Okay. Let's talk about the elements of what a trademark is. A trademark, as we said before, is a word or a name or a symbol or a device used by a person to identify and distinguish their goods or products that are sold from those that are sold by others. It's a commercial identification. And what are your elements? It has to be distinct. It's got to be non-functional. Unlike a patent, which has to have utility, this trademark has no utility other than to identify. And it's got to be first in trade. That means it's got to be the first identifiable mark. Nobody else can use it. Let's talk about these. Sorry. Distinctiveness means that it is got to be unique. Now, you saw that same requirement in a patent, and you saw that same requirement in a copyright. Nobody else can have it. You cannot have a copyright or a patent that somebody else has. Why? Because of the fact, remember, with a patent, you have to do the search and you have to prove to the patent and trademark office that nobody else has it. You have to do the same thing for a trademark. You have to prove that nobody else has that. And that distinctiveness means it's got to be your own. Nobody else has those golden arches. I can turn around and copyright that, McDonald's says, and they did. It was the name of McDonald's. The golden arches were the M for McDonald's. And the McDonald's brothers put that on their restaurant. Well, when Ray Kroc bought the rights of McDonald's, he bought the golden arches and the registered trademark that went with that. He trademarked it, saying that nobody else could use the golden arches because it was an identifiable mark of that restaurant. People associated those golden arches with the McDonald's restaurant franchise. Interestingly enough, that old McDonald's, and sadly I'm old enough to remember that, used to have these gigundous golden arches on each side of their restaurant building. They'd have 50 foot in the air golden arches, one on each side. Today it's on the sign that goes together in the shape of an M, which stands for McDonald's. That is a registered trademark. It doesn't add any utility. It doesn't make your hamburgers any better. But what it does is it identifies that restaurant, that golden arches, because it went also, interestingly enough, with their French fries. You thought gold, oh, French fries. And those golden arches, which came to an M, meant McDonald's. It's got to be non-functional. That it doesn't have a purpose other than to identify it. And it's got to be first in trade. That's important. Let's move on. What are your rights when you have a trademark? You prevent unauthorized use of the word, name, symbol, or device. So if somebody else comes out with the golden arches for McGillicuddy's hamburgers, you can say, don't use my golden arches. It's not for McGillicuddy, it's for McDonald's. You can prevent the dilution of your trademark. You can't have somebody turn a golden W upside down, okay? Because that demonstrates that you've basically appropriated my trademark and changed it just a little bit to try and take off my goodwill. Now, can you trademark another W? Yeah, Walgreens has done that. Their trademark is a W, which is a curly W. The Washington Nationals have a similar curly W, but they've each kind of separated it by color and by design to make sure that they each have it separately. You can use and maintain exclusive rights over that trademark, and you can sue someone who takes that trademark. What are some very famous trademarks? You have the swoosh on the side of the Nike sneaker. It's identified with that product. You have the three stripes on Adidas. That is also a similar sneaker brand on that, but they're different and they identify that product. And you have the Colonel Sanders logo on the side of Kentucky Fried Chicken, KFC. That is, KFC itself is a registered trademark. Used to stand for Kentucky Fried Chicken. They changed the term to KFC because they thought it would be a health-conscious world. Nobody wants to fry things anymore. Well, as a result of that, that is now a registered trademark, KFC, okay? As long as with the Colonel Sanders logo, that is identifiable too with that product. How long is the duration of your rights? It's good for 10 years, but unlike patents, which are good for 20, and unlike copyrights, you have infinite renewals. As long as you pay the renewal fee to the Patent and Trademark Office in Washington, D.C., you can provide for an infinite renewal of your trademark. It goes on forever. A lot of times, these are taglines. One of the taglines has been trademarked for Kentucky Fried Chicken is finger licking good. And those trademarks are identified with that product. Now, look at a trademark in real terms. Cisco Systems is a computer technology company operated in San Francisco originally. Then they manufacture routers and certain technology products like modems and things of that nature, wireless connectivity to the internet. And they've trademarked a number of their items. Cisco Systems is their name, and they've trademarked their name so no one else can say, hey, listen, I'm from San Francisco and I'm going to call myself Cisco Systems. They want that unique. So they trademarked their name. You can trademark your name. That's an ability to do it. They also, because they come from San Francisco, they trademarked a logo of the Golden Gate Bridge, just like the McDonald's did with the golden arches. They designed a logo of the Golden Gate Bridge, which is all these lines on a background that kind of looks like the Golden Gate Suspension Bridge. That symbol was trademarked. And look, it has that registered trademark right next to the logo. They also have a slogan, Empowering the Internet Generation. That slogan is trademarked. So if somebody else tries, like a Microsoft, to use the term empowering the internet generation, they can't use it. Why? That slogan is trademarked. Sorry, for some reason my program isn't responding. Oh dear. Nextly, we're going to discuss, even though that this isn't responding properly, how does a system that you have get trademarked? How does something, let's see if I can. There we go. How's a trademark obtained? First, you have to design that trademark, whatever it is. You draw a picture of the golden arches. You turn around and draw that picture of the Golden Gate Bridge. You come up with a fancy slogan, "Better for All America," something like that. Okay. You select that appropriate mark, and you perform a search, just the way you do a patent search. And then you create a right in that trademark by filing it and registering it with the Patent and Trademark Office in Washington, D.C. That's a very important thing to do. You have to register it, because unlike a copyright, the trademark really doesn't go into effect until you register it. You have to register it. And remember, it has to be renewed after the 10-year period with infinite renewals. Okay. Let's talk about some really generally important issues with intellectual property. First and foremost, remember, they're all done under federal statutes. You have several federal statutes in the United States Code that provides for copyrights, patents, and trademarks. How you obtain them, what your rights are under them, it's all under federal law. The United States Patent and Trademark Office in Washington, D.C. is what governs this. This is a picture of their building. And interestingly enough, in order to be a patent lawyer and practice before that, it's all done in federal court, it requires an admission to a separate bar exam. Whereas a lawyer in New York State, I have to be admitted to the bar of the state and federal courts in New York. I am a member of both of those. You have to take a bar exam in order to be admitted. But I can, as a result, practice in any state court in the New York State court system. I'm also a member of the federal bar, meaning I was admitted to practice before the United States District Court for the Northern District of New York, which is here in Albany, and I am a practitioner before that federal bar. But in order to practice patent law, you have to, even in the federal court in the Northern District of New York, because that's where most cases are venued, is within the federal district court, you have to take a separate bar, which is a patent bar, and you have to pass that. It's a separate bar exam. Now, interestingly enough, to take that bar, you don't even have to be a lawyer. If you are a clerk at the patent office in Washington, D.C., you're eligible to take the patent bar. Interestingly enough, that's an exception to most bar admissions, where particularly in New York State, you have to be a lawyer in order to take the bar exam to start with, meaning you have to be a graduate from an ABA-approved law school. And as a result of that, those are the people who take the bar exam. Now, sometimes you can go to a law school. There are certain law schools that are not approved by the ABA. You generally have to go in that state to take that state bar. If you are a lawyer approved by a ABA, if you go to an ABA approved law school, you can take a bar exam in any state because it's been approved on that. But remember, a patent lawyer has to take that separate bar, and it's issued in Washington, D.C., and administered by that Patent and Trademark Office. As I mentioned before, I have a very gifted sister who happens to be a patent lawyer. So not only is she admitted as a lawyer in the state of New York and before the federal courts as well, but she also took and passed that very impressive patent bar exam that is offered by the Patent and Trademark Office in Washington, D.C. Now, as we mentioned before, there are many issues, special issues, regarding the world of intellectual property, okay? One of them is, remember, because they are operated under federal statute, if you go to a foreign country, unless we have a treaty with that foreign country, your intellectual property rights issued under United States law aren't respected in those foreign countries. So you have to get those intellectual property rights by going through those foreign countries that we don't have treaties with by registering your intellectual property rights, albeit a copyright, a patent, or a trademark, with that country's laws. The biggest one, of course, is China. We do not have a treaty with China over our intellectual property rights. Europe, most of Europe we do, but we don't with China. And as a result of that, China frequently can legally violate our copyright laws overseas. Now, they can't violate them in the United States because United States law applies. But if you create a song, they can sell it elsewhere and reap the profits, because unless you register your copyright or register your patent or register your trademark in China, it does not have the level of protection that we get here in the United States. Now, there's a lot of big players in intellectual property. The first one is General Electric Company. General Electric Company maintains a large research and development center in Niskayuna, New York, whereby they produce gajillion patents every year. All kinds of wonderful products are developed at that research and development facility. It's a multi-billion dollar facility, and it's very secure. You're not allowed to go in there unless you have an invitation to. But all kinds of wonderful products come out of there on a daily basis. Things like the MRI machine. We talked about the polymer Lexar. That it was produced at GE R&D. All kinds of wonderful products are produced out of there. General Electric is fiercely protective of its intellectual property rights because it comes up with so many great new ideas and spends a lot of money on research and development of those ideas. Now, one of the ideas that comes out is an idea of whether or not, this was a big case, can you get a patent on life? Well, that had never been decided before. And one of the ideas that came out of the General Electric Company lab was there was a problem with oil spills all over the world. And a brilliant scientist at General Electric Company came up with an idea of this basically organism. It was a genetically designed cellular organism, an amoeba, if you will, that would eat the oil and digest it, and then hence do away with the oil spill, because basically they drop billions of these organisms onto the oil spill and eat it up and basically excrement it out, and it would transform it back into a natural state. Well, General Electric Company wanted to be able to make money off of this by saying, okay, we're going to charge the company that had created the oil spill, we're going to drop this on the oil spill, and we're going to have it munch up all the oil and then transform it into non-harmful sea life as a result of that. And the court was considering whether or not that could be a patent, because obviously it's the first time that organism got out. There was a debate of whether or not they could protect that intellectual property right. And the United States Supreme Court decided this case. And they said, can you have a patent on life? Because that organism that they genetically engineered was a living organism. It wasn't just a mixture of processes. You genetically engineered that amoeba, you created life. And that question was, again, you cannot have, if you remember the qualifications for a patent, it can't be naturally occurring. Well, the other people who wanted to use this, because many people wanted to take care of the oil spill and not have to pay through the nose to GE to do that, they wanted to be able to use it themselves and create it themselves. And as a result of that, they sued in the United States Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court had to come up with the issue of whether or not genetically engineering an organism that was creating life, which naturally occurs, and it could have occurred through a mutation. So was this a patentable subject matter? And the Supreme Court of the United States said yes, because you genetically engineered it. It is a patentable subject matter. So yes, by creating that, they did hold as a matter of law that it is a patentable subject matter. So theoretically, if you create certain items such as this organism, you can get a patent on it. Now, the question becomes, however, what about if you create an organ? You turn around and 3D print a heart or a lung or something that they want to transplant in you. Can you get a patent on that? Can you have a property right in that? That jury's still out. That has not been determined yet. Certain arguments have been made that is something which is patentable and that you can have an ownership interest in it. Again, if I take your kidney from you, I cannot sell that. That is precluded as a matter of public policy, as we discussed on that titled ownership. But what about if I manufacture it in a 3D printer? Well, it appears the law right now seems to indicate that you might be able to get a patent on that based on that GE case with the amoeba, and that you may well end up being able to do that. We're not quite there yet, but many of the companies that are working on it have filed patents and have been provisionally granted that on that basis. Okay. Disney and motion picture companies are one of the most aggressive people in intellectual property rights, because they have billions of dollars out there in all of their intellectual property, everything from Mickey Mouse dolls to their motion pictures to things like the issues regarding the music industry and things of that nature, audio. Our case tonight is going to be just on that issue, where a record company sued a peer-to-peer electronic platform known as Napster. Well, Disney is one of the most aggressive intellectual property defenders in the United States. Matter of fact, they're frequently known in the federal courts as the mouse that roared. Why? Because they are very strong on protecting their intellectual property rights. Don't mess around with Disney. Don't do a knockoff of the Disney movies. Don't turn around and try and make a false Yoda doll, because I will tell you, Disney will come after you with everything they got, and they have some of the most talented lawyers in the United States of America who defend their intellectual property rights. Intellectual property is valuable. Remember, property is a collection of rights, not a collection of things. And one of the reasons is because of intellectual property, because we want to reward people for coming up with creative conduct and content. And as a result of this, remember that more and more of our society is based on electrons, because we work in the computer field, we work in the area of intellectual property, and we want people to be rewarded for that. And intellectual property does that. We're now going to move on to our case of AM Records versus Napster. We'll see you shortly. Thanks so much.